This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What is... Dax, are you...
tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes, I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between, because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Well, we've been hearing a lot about the measles. A couple of things we know about it. It's somewhat rare in today's world, but it's highly contagious and it can be deadly. And here to talk to us about it is U.S. Senator Bill Cassidy. Senator, welcome to the show.
Hey, Newell, thanks for having me, man, and happy Mardi Gras to everybody, and I hope you're not getting the measles.
I definitely hope to not get the measles. I got a lot of drinking I got to do this weekend, Senator, so I don't want to get the measles. But if it's not one thing, it's another, right? And we're beginning to see this move across the country. What are you seeing?
Well, so there's the outbreak in West Texas, which then went a little bit further west into New Mexico. But now there are reports that there's a measles outbreak in San Antonio. So you can imagine it's just kind of moving eastward on the I-10, east and west. And apparently there's a big rodeo in Houston coming up in which kids from across the state go. So you can imagine that there might be somebody there kind of brewing measles that might expose others. And so, of course, if it gets to Houston, it's getting to Lake Charles. It's getting to Laffey, to Baton Rouge, to North Shore, and to New Orleans. So I just want people to be protected. Make sure your child's vaccinated.
Absolutely. Let's talk about the vaccination for a moment. It's been around for a long, long time, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, I was born in 57. So after 57 is when, you know, the vaccine became available. If you're born in 57, prior to 57, you frankly didn't need to get the vaccine because they assumed you were exposed. But subsequent to that, people got vaccinated, and the amount of measles and the amount of measles complications, by that I mean kids going into the hospital with pneumonia, just went down precipitously. And by and large, we almost had measles like never saw a case of it. And then around the teens of this century, we begin to see more and more cases once more.
And how does this actually reveal itself? Typically, you know, in the life cycle, once you're infected, what would you anticipate to experience first?
I'm not a pediatrician, and so, you know, some of those are the OBs, because pregnant, those women anticipating getting pregnant may want to get vaccinated. That's to discuss with your OB. But let me just speak as a physician who used to do a lot of immunization work. First, it's highly contagious. One person who has measles can infect 12 to 18 other people. The classic thing is to get a rash, which means incredibly uncomfortable. But also, what puts people into the hospital and kills them. Unfortunately, there's been one death in Texas now. It can cause pneumonia. Now, there's other more rare complications. For example, it can actually cause what is called a type of inflammation of the lining of the brain. That once the child has measles, they can actually have this inflammation become apparent 7 to 10 years later. And that can be, you know, terrible. So, and then if a woman is pregnant, and she's exposed to the measles, then both she and her unborn child can be affected. The child may be stillborn, or have a decreased growth in the womb, or again other type complications. So so the most classic is measles, but I'm telling you the other stuff can happen. And the child that died in Texas apparently died from pneumonia.
So if you have measles and you recognize it, you've been diagnosed, you really then have to separate yourself from others because of how contagious it is, right?
You really should. Now, by the way, you want to look at your household. If you have somebody in your household who's immunocompromised, which is to say they might be on steroids or they may be on chemotherapy for cancer or something like that, you want to, what they call it, a cocoon. And you might get, you know, exactly what a cocoon is. You want to wrap them around with people who also are, who have already been vaccinated or who you know to be immune, so that they don't bring it in and you don't give it to them. So, if you decide to stay at home, you want to make sure that the people you're staying with are immune and certainly not pregnant if they've not been vaccinated before their pregnancy, and not immunocompromised. So even that kind of separation from others, you want to think about. And again, speak to your doctor. I'm the guy who used to do immunization work, who's now the United States Senator. But you should ideally speak to your physician and get something personalized to you.
I think I read a story the other day, or maybe it was late last evening, about a child who was getting on an airplane that obviously had already broken out in the rash and had measles. I mean, that's like stepping into a Petri dish with everybody, right?
You can't. Sometimes something is so terrible you can't help but laugh, because that's exactly what you don't want to happen. Oftentimes on those airplanes, there's, you know, they recycle the air, but you're still having some air that others are breathing a little bit more than you're outside. And it can't be spread in a respiratory fashion. And it is highly contagious. Now, if you're vaccinated, you're okay. Unfortunately, there's not as much, the rate of immunization is not as high as it used to be. Now, the vaccine is safe. And I know there's been a lot of chatter, but I'll note that Ralph Abraham, who is the Louisiana State Surgeon General, in response to the recent outbreak in Texas, just made a statement. It is safe. It is a safe vaccine, and highly recommended people getting vaccinated. Speak to your pediatrician or your OB if you're anticipating getting pregnant. She or he is going to say it is safe. So speak to those trusted medical advisors, but the way, if someone does get on a plane or any other setting and they have the measles, if you are immune, you are okay. It's those people for whom the vaccine maybe didn't work as well as it should have, or who have become immunocompromised since they've had their vaccination, or, you know, the most tragic thing, Newell, children less than one don't get vaccinated because their immune systems aren't ready for it. If a child less than one is exposed to measles, they are at a higher risk of complications. So in some cases, you can't have vaccinated, but if that baby is exposed to someone with measles, it could be trouble.
So this advice is to folks who have never been vaccinated, just so we're clear. I'm getting a couple of texts about this.
So if you've never been vaccinated, you know, if you're born before 1957, they assume that you had the measles. I was born in 1957. I remember having the measles, number one. Yeah. Number two, some people are vaccinated, but as they age, the antibodies, the kind of protective thing that floats through your bloodstream, goes down to a level which is no longer sure to be protective. And that's why OBs will talk to a woman who's anticipating getting pregnant, and she should speak to her doctor as to whether or not she should have a booster dose for her measles. So she may have been vaccinated as a child, but the kind of protection has kind of just waned down a little bit, and she has to speak to her doc as to whether or not she needs a booster dose. So, and then the last, some people are vaccinated and they get immunocompromised. They get put on steroids for some illness or chemotherapy.
Right.
In that case, that's why we talk about herd immunity. The more people who are immunized in a community, you're setting a wall of protection around someone who either isn't vaccinated or the vaccine didn't work or they're immunocompromised. They never get exposed to the virus, because everybody they interact with is protected. But if you've not been vaccinated, let me just put a big plug in that you speak to your doctor about being vaccinated.
So, you know, we learned during COVID that there were kind of two types of immunities that you wanted to try to achieve. One, where some immunologists have said that I don't know that we ever really achieve it, and that's sterilizing immunity, and the other being functional immunity. But what we know historically, correct me if I'm wrong, from the measles vaccine, that it has a very high efficacy rate, that if you take that vaccine, you will not get the measles.
Amen, brother. Amen. 90 to 95% of the people that get the vaccine are going to be protected. It's safe, and it's 95% protective. Now, 5%,
which in modern medicine today, correct me if I'm wrong, that's about as close as we've ever gotten to complete sterilizing immunity, right?
Yes, yes. And by the way, the vaccine is safe. I can tell you hepatitis B vaccine may give you 98%, but 95% immunity is pretty daggum good, and it's safe. And so if you've not been vaccinated, strongly urge you to be vaccinated. And then going back to that special population, women anticipating pregnancy, speak to your OB so that she may decide to give you a little bit of a booster dose.
Senator, any side effects, any known side effects? I mean, I know I had the measles vaccine, but it was so long ago, I don't even remember. Any side effects from the vaccine? Just sore arm or something more than that?
You're going to get a sore arm. It is a live vaccine. The reason they don't give it to people who are immunocompromised or who are already pregnant or who are less than 1 year of age is that it can cause measles. Now, if you've got a normal immune system, which like almost everybody does, but not quite everybody, it's going to handle it beautifully. But if you're immunocompromised, then there is a risk of that. And so if you are, the recommendation is, for example, if you know that you're about to start chemotherapy, which is going to decrease your immune function, and you think you might be exposed to measles because maybe you're with a community that doesn't vaccinate, then consider getting your dose, your protection checked, and if you need to, get a booster. That's a very specialized sort of thing, but the big side effect I'd worry about is if somebody was immunocompromised and got the dose, but that's going to be a rather rare thing.
Yeah. And let's see, it's not measles that's linked to shingles, it's chickenpox, right?
Correct. And there is a vaccine which helps prevent that, one, to prevent the chickenpox, but also when you're older, to prevent a reactivation of the chickenpox, which causes shingles.
You know, it's funny, you remember certain things as a kid. I know I had the measles. I was told I had the measles. I don't remember having the measles, but man, do I remember having the chickenpox.
How old are you?
I don't remember. I'm your age. I was born in January of 58.
Yeah, almost certainly. I mean, you had the measles. And again, you stayed at home. You were red. You know, you got to drink Coca-Cola, and your mama made you feel better. So for most people, there's not a problem. It's just occasionally when you have enough people having measles, you end up with somebody in the hospital. And unfortunately, as just happened in Texas, a school-aged child died. And so it's almost always benign, not always. And when it doesn't, no school-aged child should die of a vaccine-preventable disease.
And, you know, the reason we're having this conversation, if we're going to be completely honest and transparent about this, is that our vaccination rates used to always be very strong here in Louisiana, but more and more we have people falling out that are not being vaccinated. And that in many realms, that kind of presents a challenge. And I think measles is one of them, because this vaccine has proven itself over and over again since, you know, I was a kid in 58, you were a kid in 57, right?
Yep. So partly we are victims of our own success in the sense that no one has seen a severe case of measles. In 1956, it would not have been a headline that a child died of measles or that children were hospitalized because of measles, because so many children were hospitalized, and that meant, of course, more kids died. Now, because of our successful immunization efforts, people have begun to take for granted how dangerous measles can be.
Right.
I can tell you, I'm old enough to remember the pediatricians who were older than me speaking about there would be two wings of a hospital dedicated to treating complications of measles. And 6 months after the vaccine came out, those hospital wards were closed. As that collective memory kind of goes away, there's not the same urgency. But I get you. But if a mama today is concerned, speak to her grandmother about how her grandmother handled this, and I think she'd probably come away with a different understanding.
Can still remember the name of my pediatrician, Dr. Jacqueline Winters. We'll never forget her. She was one of the finest individuals I ever met in my life. It's funny how you
pediatricians, they're great people. They really are. They're so mission-driven.
Yeah, it's so true. Final thoughts, Senator?
Yeah, I want everybody to be healthy. I remember a few years ago when the COVID came, and it came to New Orleans during Mardi Gras, and it came to New Orleans and then spread from New Orleans. We don't want measles to come to New Orleans during Mardi Gras, where 12 to 18 people are infected per person, and then we end up with a mini epidemic here on our streets. We just don't want that. And the vaccine's safe. If you're not vaccinated, please do so. And if you think you might need to be, speak to your physician.
Absolutely. Well, have a great Mardi Gras season as well. And thank you so much for joining us today. We truly appreciate it.
Thanks, Duel. Appreciate it, man. Be safe.
All right. That's U.S. Senator Bill Cassidy. We will be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So you're singing?
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks. RSNs available with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code FLEX at checkout. That's harrys.com, code FLEX. Enjoy!
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
StreetEasy asked former New Yorkers if there's anything they miss about life in New York City.
Let me put it this way. House of the Home Theater sounds appealing. but that's until you realize you no longer have a theater district.
Whether you're looking to rent or it's time to buy, StreetEasy has the local expertise you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. StreetEasy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
Welcome back, folks. A lot going on this weekend. Obviously, a lot of things happening tonight. Muse is the big parade that we will be seeing this evening, tomorrow night. A great lineup as well. Just got a bunch of press releases. The Bacchus Bash celebrates their 40th annual event. Largest day-long block party of the Mardi Gras season just before the Super Crew. They will have an incredible entertainment schedule out there. The King of Neon, Manny Fresh, Paper Chase, the Top Cats, Category 6, and others. Annual 14-hour block party kicks off at noon on Sunday, March 2nd at Generations Hall, located at 310 Andrew Higgins. It's both indoor and outdoor parties showcasing several stages. Don't want to miss it. They have tickets available. You visit metronola.com or generationhall.com if you have any interest in heading that way. So much going on. I mean, things are just looking so well. They're stacking up. Weather looks good. Monday, they're saying it looks like that's going to be fine. Tuesday, not till Tuesday night, which will be good. We're going to be on the balcony at New Orleans and Company over on St. Charles Avenue again. And I want to thank Walt Leger and his whole crew out there at New Orleans and Company for hosting us again. Great vantage point to broadcast from. We're able to catch the parades at an earlier point in time, so we're very excited about that. All right, we are joined by Glade Bilby, president of the French Quarter Citizens Group. Glade, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Newell, and happy Mardi Gras. Hopefully the weather continues to be good.
Absolutely. Glade, so a lot was done relative to security measures in the quarter in anticipation of the Super Bowl. A lot of these measures have been carried over for Mardi Gras. How did it work out from the resident perspective thus far?
I think everybody was prepared for it. I mean, we knew there were going to be barricades. We knew there was going to be a kind of a secure block around Bourbon Street between Royal and Dauphine. And everybody's used to some sort of traffic interruption. Of course, the 2 months prior to that, we had a lot of street construction and repaving, milling and repaving. And so there was blockages all over the place. So that wasn't so difficult. I think that people felt very secure. We had National Guardsmen around, a lot of state police, a lot of NOPD, our supplemental police patrol with French Quarter Task Force. So it was very well secured, and I think it went off very well.
Well, it's good to hear. I mean, there, you know, anytime you have security measures deployed, it creates disruptions. I said this earlier today that, you know, that we're creatures of habit. We try to do the same thing in the same way, in the same fashion every year, and that's not always available. So I was, you know, this being the first year that they really stepped up these security measures, I was kind of curious as to how people reacted, but we know that you folks are nimble and have to adapt there to all kinds of different challenges daily, right?
We do, indeed. We do. And I think the good thing about living in the quarter is you can walk most places. You need to come and go, but it's a very walkable area as a neighborhood. You know, I've always called it America's most historic neighborhood, and I think that's why most of us have lived there for as long as we have, because it is walkable. You can walk to get something to eat, you can walk to the grocery, you can walk to some of the stores, and certainly we have a lot of friends in the neighborhood, so that's a positive.
Glade, I think communication, too, is really important. I mean, I know there were some years where it seemed to not go very well. How has that worked thus far? And from my appreciation, it seems like there's been more open lines of communication than ever before. Your thoughts?
There certainly has. I know that the state police and Troop NOLA and NOPD down in the 8th District has done a good job as far as telling people where they should go, where they shouldn't go. You had Colin Arnold on earlier, and he's done a terrific job with that. I think that more than ever, people are being transparent. The administration's being more transparent. There was a number of people that met together with Tenio and Braxton's group and the leadership of NOPD prior to maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago to talk about closures and what do we do on Bourbon Street? How is this going to affect things? And one of the things that came from that meeting is the mayor had actually asked the group of people, it was probably 40 people. Does anybody really envision a permanent closure of Bourbon Street? Raise your hand. Nobody raised their hand. And so that's something that we're going to have to deal with security measures after the fact. But there has been a lot of conversation about this because it's going to affect business and residents.
Obviously, permanent is much different than, you know, kind of sporadic or maybe different times of the day, you know, where as long as there's a pattern that can be developed in having adequate ingress and egress, I get the sense that the neighborhood's not opposed to that, right?
No, not to that, but just think about it logistically and what we have now. 19 million tourists a year. That's a lot of stuff coming in, tourists, cars, luggage, food, liquor, and there's a lot of stuff going on every day. So it would be really difficult to close off any significant sections because of that. We have a lot of infrastructure that has to be maintained on a 24/7 basis. So closing it for a certain amount of time, hey, that makes a lot of sense. So I think we're up for some plan, but what happens after Mardi Gras when all of this kind of relaxes? What do we do next? That's what we need to plan for.
You know, it's interesting. There are other areas of the world that have, you know, very similar type neighborhoods to the French Quarter. You see it more in Europe than you do anywhere else, I think. They seem to be able to work it out, you know, where they've created that balance between residents and commercial operations. And they kind of change the way that they do things, the way that they deliver, the time that they deliver. And, you know, once you get into that repeated pattern, people get used to it, they staff for it, and it's not as big a deal as some folks want to make it to be on the front end.
No, you do, Newell, but I think one of the things that people forget is Venice. It's a much larger area for much less number of tourists per year. We're a very small geographic area for 19 million tourists. When you do a comparison of per 100,000 or per million, we are kind of focused in this one area, and we have a lot of people in one area. So that changes the nature of the conversation. I understand what you're talking about, Paris, Barcelona, Venice, some of the other big cities, even San Francisco, New York. They're much larger than our little footprint here in the French Quarter. So,
sure.
I mean, you have to
sure.
take that into consideration, yeah.
Yeah, I know, but you know, there's Barcelona is always. I've talked about it before. It's amazing what they do there and how they do it, and they it's almost as though they recognize the architectural challenges that they have, the infrastructure challenges that they have, and they've modified waste disposal and how they do go about doing it, even to the extent of the type of containers that they use. Which I thought was very interesting, you know, and it took less time and it was very efficient in the way that they provided services there.
The containers made me think of something. I mean, whatever the circumstances were with the sanitation contract that we had that led us to IV waste right now, Sydney Torres has now smaller garbage trucks that are more effective in the quarter. They don't rattle all the old buildings. They're more nimble. And I think doing things that recognize the status of the architecture, the narrow streets, and the tremendous number of people that come through here is important. And I think Ivy Waste has done a terrific job. I mean, I know you had him on the show not long ago, but you can see it in the street. You can see the cleanliness, the sanitation, how the French Quarter looks a lot better. So I'm going to tell people, You may not want to come down for Mardi Gras because it's crowded and everybody has other things to do, but come down and see how nice we are looking these days through the efforts of French Quarter Management District. We have 95% of the lights lit, which took us 3 years to do. I know you and I have talked about that, but it's well lit up. So we've made a lot of progress because of a football game, let's just say, but we've made a lot of progress nonetheless.
You know, it's interesting, and I'm glad you brought up the example of Sydney because I was going to go there. But if you would think about all the other services that both the city and everyone else has to provide, where when you bring the ordinary equipment into that area, you just completely clog things up, right? And it makes it a lot harder to do any remedial work in there. But if you modify the size truck and how you bring materials in and everything else, it's not even a blip on the screen. And that's really what I was talking about in other areas of the world, that they recognize that if they're going to be able to provide preventive maintenance for the infrastructure, this, that, and otherwise, they have to modify the way they bring materials into that neighborhood and otherwise, because it's different than every other neighborhood.
You're right. You said modifying. That's the appropriate word. When you take garbage trucks, beer trucks, street cleaning trucks, that 4,800 gallons of water that come down the street at 35 miles an hour, all of our fragile buildings, 200-year-old buildings, rattle and crack. If you would put the speed limit down to, let's say, 18 miles an hour, it's a weird number, but it would make people recognize not 15, not 20, 18. That would do a lot to making it better for the rattling and the shaking of all of the houses that are here. And so I think little things like that would go a long way to kind of changing behavior and also making us last a little bit. As you know, anybody that owns an old house is just a steward of the house. It's been there way before I got there, way before after we leave. And I think most of the people that live in the quarter are in the same position. So we want to protect the architecture as well. And modifying behavior would go a long way to doing that.
Glenn, what percentage of the structures in the French Quarter do you believe are still built on cotton bales?
Probably 90% of them. And I'm laughing because most people get in the house and they don't know what's there until something cracks or leans or sinks, and then you know. But you haven't, unless it was the fire, but you didn't have the same sort of infrastructure, footings and support that you had back in the 1800s that you do now. So a lot of them are just the same as we've always had. So I imagine a very low percentage.
Yeah. And it's interesting. I mean, that's why obviously the work that needs to be done on the cathedral is so important, because I don't know that that's been dealt with for a couple hundred years.
Probably not. And you see little evidence of things cracking, but it's supposed to be sinking as well. And I would imagine everything sinking, even though the Indians were right and the French Quarter is the highest point around here. So when they put us together, it was smart to put the French Quarter in the original historic core right where it's in now. So I think we're in good shape as far as that. But with seas rising and lowering and whatever you want to call global warming or climate change, it's not going to get better by itself.
Glad you mentioned streetlights and they have finished that project. Is that my understanding?
They're about 90%. There's a few of them that they need to replace a pole, or we got a report last week from the French Quarter Management District. Maybe 95%, and they're wrapping it up. They should be wrapped up within the next 10 days on repairing this. Now it's our charge, and what we want to do is keep some funds in our account so that we can maintain this and not have to rely on another agency to do it. Because, frankly, this has been on French Quarter Management that's done this. And I'd just point out, since we're talking about Mardi Gras, that we also put a kind of a package together with Glass Half Full and are doing bead recycling at some of the hotels, the Nesta, the Mont Leon, the Marriott. And
I think last week they did 1,500 pounds of beads, and it was very successful last year. That's why we decided to fund this and do this partnership again. So that's a positive. So French Quarter Management District is doing a lot to think positively about the direction of the quarter and what we can do for the security and to make things better for the residents and businesses.
Absolutely. I know one of the other issues was street signage. Where do we stand there?
Well, it's getting better. They're not all replaced because I walk around enough to see it. But at least now we're putting the sevens back in the no parking on the new repaved streets so that people know not to park there. Because I think a lot of people, if you drive up and you don't have any signage, you just park there if it doesn't tell you not to. But they've done a lot better with the striping and getting things back to where it should be. So I think there's a few signs to go up, but we're in pretty good shape.
Good, good. Final thoughts?
Well, I just come down and like come down to the quarter, and my mantra is play safe and stay safe, and that's the way to do it. I mean, if you act reckless, it's not going to end up good usually. So come down and have a good time and check us out in the quarter. I'll be on the street. I'm not privileged to be on a balcony like you are, but I'm going to be on the street. Seeing all the people on Royal
Street. I'm not in the quarter. I'm on St. Charles Avenue.
I know you are. But we just walk around in the neighborhood, and everybody's costume, and it's a great time. So I encourage people to come down, and hopefully the weather cooperates with us.
If the weather's anything like it is today, it is going to be jam-packed down there. It'll be a great time for sure.
Yes, it will. Thank you.
Absolutely. Glade Bilby, as always, thank you so much for joining us. Always appreciate your time, your insight. Have a great Mardi Gras.
My pleasure, and you too.
We will be right back, 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and text line. Stay with us. Folks, just a reminder, tomorrow, NBC's The Today Show will be broadcasting from New Orleans, and they are going to feature the 610 Stompers. At around 8 a.m. tomorrow morning, in fact, one of our own here at Odyssey, Chris Pope and his cast of Ordinary Men with Extraordinary Moves is scheduled to be featured in that 8 a.m. hour. So if you're running about the city and you want to go see the Today Show, they will be featuring our own 610 Stompers. I don't know if you've ever seen them perform. I actually have in other cities, and to sit back and just look at the reaction of people when they see they come, and it's like this delayed response. They're looking, they're trying to figure it out, and then all of a sudden they get into the music and they start moving, and you know, the guys are pointing at those in the audience and everything. It is really funny to see, you know, when they're in some place other than New Orleans. We know what they're all about now, and we know that we just start partying with them right away, but they've been great ambassadors for the city as well. I've had a lot of friends in the 610 Stompers. A lot of them have tried to convince me that that's something that I want to do, and it's like, I'll leave that to others. Ordinary Men with Extraordinary Moves. I love it. 8 a.m. tomorrow morning. I think they're going to be in Jackson Square, if my memory serves me correct, or right around there. Can't miss it. So look forward to that, and wish Chris Pope from our office here there. Have a great time. All right, folks, we'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and text line. Stay with us. Folks, when we come back after the top of the hour news break, we'll visit with Raphael Goyeneche, president of the Metropolitan Crime Commission. Got a number of issues to talk about. We'll spend some time talking about ankle monitors and some of the most recent data that we have there. So stay with us. We'll be right back with Raphael Goyeneche of the Metropolitan Crime Commission.
The PGA Tour is all systems go, and so is the new show Early Wedge on the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Sportsline experts Sia Nejad, Mike McClure, and Eric Cohen alongside myself, Rick Gaiman, Patrick McDonald, and Jason Sobel. Five times per week, the Early Wedge provides the best information for DFS lineups, outright selections, and so much more. Follow and listen to Early Wedge in the Early Edge feed on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.